Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the combination auto repair shop and charm school here at Car Talk Plaza.
See, it turns out that these combinations are not so unusual.
Yeah?
Thousands of pieces of mail addressed to both of us. I mean, did you read any of your mail? No.
You just give
it to me. I do all the work. You come in and that's it.
Yeah, well, actually, if you want to give a little background here?
I mentioned a few weeks ago that I read something from a menu in our favorite town. Where's Claude's live?
Unadilla,
New York. Right. There was a combination restaurant or something, a furniture store and undertaker, funeral parlor. And it turns out...
And you thought it was interesting.
I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition.
Yes.
And here's one from Ray Poff says, you commented on the combination of funeral parlor and furniture business. This is not unusual. Here's one, Rudy's Welding Service and Cold Beer.
You know, if you're a welder, you need a cold beer every once in a while. That's probably how it got started.
Here's another one. Out in Mokena, Illinois, there's a place called Al's Shoe Repair and Tropical Fish, says Matt Cox from the, I guess, out there.
I like that. Sure.
And lastly, just to add a little bit of erudition to the little discussion we're having here.
Yes.
Here's a letter from one of the most brilliant people in the world, a PhD, Johanna Miller Lewis, assistant professor of history at the University of Arkansas. I was listening to your most excellent program. She is intelligent. Your most excellent program last weekend.
Too.
When I heard the letter from the gentleman wondering about the combination furniture store and undertaker.
I love it when you do the French part.
As a college professor who's most interested in broadening the knowledge of Americans everywhere, I must respond. The practice of combining furniture and undertaking dates back to the 18th century.
Sonia Henny's tutu.
Where cabinet makers made furniture and coffins, and as burial practices became more formalized and increasing the demand for coffins, these artisans saw the opportunity to augment their cabinet making by offering additional funereal and burial services. And she closes.
And a layaway plan.
And she closes with, you can get a layaway plan in both departments.
Yes, of course.
Which layaway plan do you want? And Johanna closes by saying, thank you for the opportunity to use my PhD in a really important capacity. You are right, Dr. Lewis.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And who are you?
My name is Shanta Ness.
Shanta?
Yes.
That's S-H-A-N-T-A?
That's it.
What a sweet little name that is.
And from whence does the name Shanta come?
It's actually a Sanskrit name from India.
It's Indian, of course.
Yes, it means peace.
Peace.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to have such a nice name.
Shanta. You know, I was just the other day, speaking of Indians, I was bemoaning the fact that we haven't heard from Arup Gupta, who has to have had the most mellifluous name. You may not remember this guy. I don't know if you've ever listened to the show before.
Yes,
but
I have.
A while ago, we had a caller whose name was, are you ready? Arup Gupta.
That's an excellent Indian name.
I mean, it's a mantra, Arup Gupta.
Arup Gupta, yeah.
Wow. So now right. Shanta will be next.
Arup Gupta in Hindi means broken down Chevy. Anyway, Shanta, what can we do for you?
Well, I have an 86 Honda Accord LX, and it's got 165,000 miles on it. It's an excellent car. Mm. However, recently the idle has been going downward. That is, when I'm just stopped at a stoplight or idling still, it idles at about 750 to 1,000 RPMs, and I kind of have to keep my foot on the gas to keep it from stalling. And it was my understanding that this is not a terribly difficult thing to fix yourself.
Really?
I guess maybe I was
really
told
to
incorrectly.
What?
Well, I mean,
that's all true.
Adjusting the idle is easy or not easy?
No, well, adjusting the idle is relatively easy. It does require taking the air filter off, which is a little bit difficult, and finding the right screw to turn.
Yeah.
And once you've done that, you may temporarily solve the problem.
Yeah, the trouble with adjusting the idle is that it's like touching up the x-rays.
And there's no reason for that screw to have ever moved.
Right.
So if the idle used to be correct and it's now incorrect,
right,
something else is going on.
Something
it
else
seems
is going
to be sporadic as well. It's not always
sporadic. Oh, that's even worse.
That's worse, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's even
kiss
worse.
Of death. Boy,
yeah.
It's been really nice talking to you.
Oh, I guess I'll go get a whole new car.
It's the trouble to see now, if it's sporadic and you increase the idle speed, then sometimes it's going to be idling too fast.
Right.
And the real question is, why is it doing this?
And if you had said that it's consistent, I might have said, the timing could be off, and that could be a result of someone that timed it incorrectly, or a stretched timing belt could cause that same problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's sporadic, it leads me to the carburetor.
Okay.
Don't go there.
Yeah,
as
I
say,
don't go there.
No, and this carburetor is the right age to have a condition called low float level.
Okay.
Mm.
Low float level is the result of a float that becomes saturated with gasoline, and as a result, it sinks too low and allows too much gasoline to enter from the float chamber into the body of the carburetor and causes minor flooding.
Okay.
And that minor flooding can cause the thing to eventually stall out on you if the flooding becomes serious enough.
Right.
Which it's
would there be other symptoms of the flooding, like typical flooding symptoms, like gas smell?
Yeah, gas smell. Or when it does flood.
Spark plugs that might be getting sooty and black, but that's you wouldn't notice that.
Right.
And when it does begin to flood badly, it will be difficult to restart.
Okay.
So I don't think I'd worry. I mean, you've got 165,000 miles on it.
Yeah,
and a new carburetor for this only cost about $800. But you can get this. You can get this one rebuilt.
All right, I love your advice.
Great. See you, Shanta.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Dave Sheff from East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
What's up?
East Rutherford.
What
is it? You said East Rutherford.
Yeah.
Is there a West Rutherford?
No, East Rutherford lies just slightly south of Rutherford.
But
yeah, just like in Boston. East Boston is slightly north of Boston.
Right.
Well,
okay, I got it. East Rutherford. I suppose that narrows it down.
All right, so what's up, David?
Well, we're moving from New Jersey to San Francisco.
Good move.
Thank you. Yeah,
that was good thinking.
Some
people are dumb enough to move out of San Francisco to places like the cold, frozen north that we live in.
Well, I did that.
But
that's
you got the brains, at least, to go from the east to the west. Some people are real dumb. In any event.
Well, I was real dumb. That's why I'm going back.
That's why you're going back.
And we'll be taking, Route 80 with a stop in Dubuque, Iowa, as a matter of fact. And we're going in the middle of the winter. Here's my question.
Yeah.
We're renting a 26-foot U-Haul truck. We have two choices. One choice is tow the car. The other choice is drive the car.
Yeah.
Who's going to drive the truck then? You're going to tow the truck?
Well, we actually may have we'll tow the truck behind the car. No, we have a friend who said he would drive the truck.
Well, there are two of you.
There are two of us, my wife and I.
Yeah, but they don't want to travel in separate vehicles. It wouldn't be any fun. They've got to chit-chat along the way.
Exactly.
That's right. But you don't mind if your friend drives all by himself for 3,000 miles. The hell with him.
Exactly.
No, Dave will ride with the buddy in the truck, and his wife will drive the Hyundai all the way across. What's the car, anyway?
The car is a 1988 Pontiac Le Mans hatchback.
Oh, my God.
See, everyone says that. Why is that car so maligned? It's a good car.
No, it isn't.
Come on.
Yes. Come on. It's a piece of junk. It's a little tin can. And I don't know why you're wasting your time taking it to California.
Because it's the only car he has. It's his pride and joy, and he loves it. And you've shot the guy down.
Well, I'm just giving him a beast. I'm giving him a third option. Dump the car and buy one that already has passed California emissions when you get there. Unless you bought this one there.
Actually, your wife called us earlier, Dave, and we told her to dump you and the car. She's flying out.
She's flying
not
out.
Possible.
And you can take the truck and everything in it.
Well, thanks for your help. Bye.
Well, I don't think I would want to tow a vehicle across the country.
Especially in the middle of the winter.
I wouldn't either, but I tow a Le Mans.
Right. You tow
a
Le Mans.
Another question. I think now it's in really good shape. Between oil changes, it never needs a drop of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Runs beautifully. It's a great little car. How much wear and tear can I expect driving a
No, no. If you like this car.
I like it.
Then fine. Then I would say you could drive it. You could also, we might want to consider having it shipped.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to consider...
The UPS with it.
You might want to consider getting a 40-foot truck...
I can see the guy coming to your house now.
Inside the truck.
Package fire! Yeah, second day air.
Second day air. That's right.
You can do that on a train, right?
Yeah, so under no circumstance... Yeah, you can do it on a train or you can do it by truck.
Why wouldn't you want to tow it?
Oh, think all the way across the country.
You won't
snow?
Even know it's back there. It could fall off in like Nebraska,
and you
might not notice it until you got to Colorado.
Well, the only problem is backing up.
Yeah,
you backing know, if you happen to miss the
parking.
Thing.
No, you know what you do when you back up?
Hmm.
Like when you have to, if you have to back into a parking space,
you disconnect it.
You disconnect the car and you drive the car.
Yeah, but don't forget too, if you're going to tow it, you're going to have to put it in a sling.
Yeah, there's going to be a trailer.
Yeah, there's a carrier that takes the front wheels off the ground.
Right. It takes all the wheels off the ground.
Takes all the wheels. That's like a little trailer.
Yeah.
That's what he said. He's going to trailer.
Trailer.
Yeah, I mean...
That's what I would do.
Assuming I have to drive the car, is there any particular precaution I should take outside of a complete tune-up and check the hoses and belts and all that stuff?
Well, I mean, you never know when something as lousy as Le Mans is going to break down, so
I
would...
Why do you think it's such a bad car?
Wait a minute. I would rent a Hyundai and tow the Hyundai behind the Le Mans.
No, I give the guy a... If you want to use this Le Mans when you get to California... Do not drive it across country. That will be the death knell for that car.
Really?
If you want to drive it when you get to California, then you must tow it out there. And towing it is not a bad idea. It really isn't. There'll be few instances where you have to back up. And when you back up, you just run over what's behind you. Don't worry about it.
It's not just a matter of backing up, though. It's just parking the thing.
You're not going to...
What, are you going to drive nonstop across the entire country? You have to stop. You never know when you're going to want to have lunch or something. You have to stop, and it's a pain.
You know when you pull into those rest areas, the restaurants along the highway?
Yeah.
There's a sign that says autos this way
and
trucks that way.
Yeah.
Instead of going one way, you're going to go the other. You're going to go with the big trucks. You're going to rub elbows.
With them guys who drive those big tractor trailers.
That's right. So, and you get a little discount at the hotel.
My recommendation is... Get a good radio so you can listen to country music all the way across the country and drive this thing like the guys that drive the big rigs. Put the whatever this thing Le Mans is on the back. Put on your 10-gallon hat and go for it.
I would agree with that if you weren't planning to get off the highway. If you're really planning to just go all the way across without really stopping to see wonderful places like
Dubuque,
Iowa.
You're not going to stop and see anything. You're just going to drive, right?
An opportunity to see the entire country, and you're going to just see Highway 80 all the way across?
The whole country's going to be blanketed in snow on the return trip.
It's up to you, Dave.
When you move back.
If you decide to stay on the highways, then I don't disagree. But if you decide you want to stop in all the little towns, I'd say spend the $500 and ship this piece of junk across the country.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Have a good trip, Dave.
Have a good trip, and thanks for being so smart and moving to San Francisco.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Monica from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Monica from Minneapolis.
Hi.
What's shaking?
Well, I don't have a problem, but have an observation that has led me to inquire.
What?
Last week, it was pretty cold up here, really cold, like the coldest it's been so far. And everybody's cars were billowing lots and lots of exhaust when it gets that cold.
Sure.
Right. So I was sitting on the entrance ramp to the freeway in the morning with a whole bunch of other cars, and there was this minivan sitting right up in front of me to the left, and it was billowing exhaust. And every once in a while, like every 30 seconds, little smoke rings would spurt out of its exhaust pipe.
Cool.
And at first, I didn't like quite believe what I saw, and I'm like, what is that? And I watched it again, and like six or eight smoke rings, well, pretty big smoke rings, would come popping out of the exhaust.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen it either. And I was wondering, how can this happen? Is this an automotive miracle that this car was spurting out smoke rings? Because when I was...
No, this is a subliminal ad by R.J. Reynolds Tobacco.
Wow, that's cool.
You know, when you're taught to blow smoke rings, you thought you have to move your throat or your cheeks or your tongue. And
sure, it's not easy to do that.
Right. What you need in order for your car to blow smoke rings is some kind of a shock wave in the system.
Ah.
So instead of having a constant or relatively constant flow of exhaust coming out the tailpipe,
you got to have a puff.
You need to have something that interrupts it for a second, like an engine miss.
Oh.
Okay, so if one of the spark plugs doesn't fire once in a while, you'll get a miss, which will stop the steady flow, and then when it does fire, you'll get a buildup of pressure.
That's good. That's
and
it'll be very good.
Like the guy in Times Square on the billboard. Remember that billboard that was there forever and ever?
Isn't it there anymore?
The guy smoking a Camel cigarette.
Uh-huh. Must be still there.
Blow smoke rings. No, I think they took it down like in 1950. But I'm not sure. Anyway, I think that would explain it. But who knows?
That would explain it. And it's not smoke, by the way, Monica. It's actually water vapor.
Right, right.
Yeah, and other known carcinogens.
Right.
And unknown. Right. Known and unknown. No, I like that. I'm going to try it.
Okay.
Wait a minute. My car would do it all the time. It's missing constantly.
I'm sure it does.
It's just got to be cold enough so that you can see it. That maybe that's why we don't see it all the time, because it's got to be like 20 below.
Well, when it's 20 below, your car puts out the greatest amount of visible smoke because the steam that's being created in the cylinders is getting condensed back into water, eventually water, but in the process, water vapor.
Uh-huh.
So that's what you're seeing coming out the tailpipe is that water vapor. Right. And because the engines aren't completely warmed up, and hence their exhaust systems aren't completely warmed up, you're more likely to see it, I think, because engines will miss during the warm-up period.
Great. Well, cool. You answered my question.
Gee, thanks for calling, Monica.
First one today.
You're welcome.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tommy, look, it's time for your weekly puzzler hint.
All right, hint away.
All right, listen closely.
Yeah.
Like most Americans, our staff holds near and dear to them certain inalienable rights, the most important of which is undoubtedly the right of free blank.
You mean to talk about Bugsy like free lunch?
You got it, baby. The puzzler was about a lunch counter and a digital watch, and I'll be back with the answer in just a minute.
I bought a sky blue Mustang in the fall of 69. Soon I left my family home for one last time. I got that V8 humming as I headed for the Pennsylvania line. With a heart so young and yearning and a pocket full of dreams, I was surrounded by a vast vermilion sky. I set my new life running and I never worried what I left behind.
And even though Italian-Americans line up to change their last names to Wilcox whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
This message comes from Car Talk and NPR sponsor BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/CarTalk to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp. This message comes from CarTalk and NPR sponsor Hemmerker Schlemmer, providing products that cleverly and effectively solve everyday problems, including how to find the perfect gift for those who have everything or profess to need nothing. Today, their lineup includes a jigsaw puzzle created from a reproduction of the New York Times that ran on the day you were born or any other milestone date. Find this and other items at Hemmerker.com. Use code NPR20 to receive $20 off your order.
The news moves fast. Listen to the NPR News Now podcast to keep up. We update stories as they evolve every hour. So no matter when you listen, you get the news as close to live as possible on your schedule. Subscribe to or follow the NPR News Now podcast.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this came from a fellow named Melvin Anderson, and I'm going to read it just the way he sent it in, and he refers to himself in the third person. Melvin had been briefing the boss at a staff meeting since he'd arrived at the office, too busy, in fact, for even a cup of coffee. Worse, he'd skipped breakfast that morning because he got up late and got dressed in a hurry and sped off to the office in his 65 Mustang convertible. Naturally, the top was up because it's January. It's cold. Gloves, you know, the whole bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, he'd been feeling pangs of hunger all morning, and when he finally finished his busy meeting, he glanced at his brand-new digital watch, which he'd just gotten for Christmas, and he says, "Yikes! No wonder I'm hungry," says Melvin. "It's 12:01. Lunchtime!"
Whoopee!
So Melvin hurriedly dons his coat, hat, and gloves and races out the rear entrance of the building. He heads for the diner across the street, and he darts between traffic lanes, parked cars, and he falls into the doorway of the lunch counter there, and the door's locked.
What?
And he says, "You gotta be kidding."
That's what he really said? What did he really say? Go on, tell
and there's
him.
A sign
tell
that,
us what he really
said. And there's a sign that says, "Closed, open at 11 a.m. Huh?
Oh, somebody's sick, maybe.
He rechecked his watch, which was working fine. It was brand new. He just gotten it for Christmas. And discovered why the lunch counter was closed. What did he discover? And Tommy knows.
Yeah, I got it right there.
He put his watch on upside down. So when it read 12:01 and he dashed out of the building, it was really 10:21.
Cool.
Pretty good. You dope, Melvin.
Well,
anyway, do we have a winner?
Yeah. The winner is Margaret Lowe from Minot, North Dakota. And for having her answer selected at random from among the thousands of correct answers that we may have gotten this week, our pal Margaret Lowe.
Isn't it
from Minot?
Mino?
No, it's Minot.
Well, I know they pronounce it Minot, but isn't it Mino?
They pronounce it Minot.
Mino.
And that's how I pronounce. Well, a lot of French people live in North Dakota.
Yeah.
So it could be Mino.
Those fur trappers, they're still up there,
but
right?
Maybe the North Dakotans don't like French, and they're just trying to get them ticked off, and they pronounce it Minot.
I love it.
And if they do that, they're going, nah, 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 nah. That's how we're going to pronounce it, in the hell with you. But anyway, Margaret Lowe from Minot, North Dakota, is going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, where Robert Siegel will personally wrap and ship your T-shirt for you if you ask really nicely, fat chance.
Anyway, we will have a brand new puzzler from the wonderful world of home economics.
Oh.
Yes.
What
does
that mean?
I don't know. So stay tuned. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Asta from Greenfield, New Hampshire.
Who?
Asta. Rhymes with pasta.
Asta.
Asta.
Yeah.
Greenfield, what state?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Asta.
Asta, wasn't that the dog? Wasn't that the thin man's dog?
Yeah, except
that's exactly right.
Asta. Mine's pronounced Asta, and it's spelled with two A's.
Asta.
Uh-huh.
Two A's in the beginning?
Yep.
Asta.
Right.
It does rhyme with pasta.
Yeah, it's like hasta la vista.
Right.
That's spelled with two A's also. Where did you get this wacko? I mean, where did you get this very interesting name, Asta?
It's my parents. It's a Swedish name.
Oh, it is?
Uh-huh.
Asta. So what's happening,
Swedish,
Asta?
Swedish, huh? Swedish.
I've got a Jeep Cherokee, and it's been giving us quite a few problems. I love the car, and I take it to the mechanic whenever it acts up. And now for a while, whenever I get in the car and I drive for a little bit, it starts revving all of a sudden. If I come to a stop sign, I can hardly brake. And then it stalls constantly. And I've taken it to the mechanic several times, and he's replaced the spark plugs, and he's done oil change, and
in other words, he's got no idea.
He has no idea.
He'll do anything.
Did he change the air freshener and the wiper blades? Because when you get down to the wiper blades, you're really down to no idea.
And then he said, now I need to change the oil every 2,000 miles because the oil's thickening up, and I just had it changed, and now it's a little better.
No, I think his brain is thickening up. What do you mean it's a little better? He attributes the thickening oil...
Yeah, well, he said that was the cause. I don't know. That's what he said. Well, the oil is thickening up, so I should have it changed every 2,000 miles instead of every 3,000 miles.
And that's what's he thinks
that's what's
causing it to
speed up. It's a little better
up.
Now. It's not revving quite as much anymore.
And you bought this.
Well, I'm car illiterate. And I have to trust somebody.
You fell for this.
What engine do you have in this thing? Do you know? Is it a four-cylinder, six-cylinder?
I think it's a six-cylinder.
How many spark plugs did he charge you for? Six.
Four.
All right, well, it's a six-cylinder. It's fuel-injected.
Yeah.
It has a check engine light in the dashboard. Does that ever come on when any of this thing is...
No.
Does it work at all? Is anyone taking the bulb out?
I don't know.
Well, you can tell me, does it come on when you first turn the key on?
Yes.
It does.
Then it works.
It works, and it hasn't come on otherwise.
No.
Hmm. Right, and they have changed the wiper blades or not?
No.
No, I think the ultimate, I have no idea, is did you wash the car? I mean, and does it do this all, if you're driving along at like 30 miles an hour?
All of a sudden it starts revving out of the blue.
Well, it could be something as simple as a sticky throttle.
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as a sticking kick down linkage on the for the transmission. There's a kick down cable that goes to the transmission. It could be that.
The what cable?
The kick down cable.
I'm writing this all down.
Good. Yeah. Write it down.
Okay, kick down cable. Okay.
I mean, did he ever suggest that he looked at the accelerator linkage?
No. He said it needed to be hooked up to some kind of a computer,
which he doesn't have.
Right.
Right. Well, you may have to take it to the Jeep dealer, but usually when there's a sensor malfunction that's causing this to happen, for example, mm-hmm. if your coolant temp sensor went haywire, it could make the thing race. It could make it run very rich. It would not thicken your oil. Rather, it would dilute your oil. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Maybe he has them mixed up. And it's possible that that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that would explain why he had to change the spark plugs. Maybe they got all black and fouled with gasoline. So
but normally the check engine light would have come on to tell you that there was a bad sensor, and then somebody, not he perhaps, could tell which sensor it was.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not. So well, you may have to go to the Jeep dealer, but ask him to check the throttle linkage to make sure that nothing's hanging up.
And that should take care of it.
Well, I don't know. No, it's probably not going to take care of it. Once he eliminates that, he's never seen it happen. Is that true?
No, he's never. He takes it out for test drives, and it never seems to oblige me when he's driving it.
Well, I would certainly ask him to talk.
But it's scary. You know, sometimes I come to a stop sign, I can hardly brake the thing because it's revving so much.
Well, throw it in neutral if that happens.
Okay.
Yeah. No, well, yeah.
At least you'll stop.
You may blow the engine, but at least it will stop. But you may have to give him one more try.
Okay.
And if he changes the wiper blades and the air freshener, then take it to the Jeep dealer and tell them what's going on.
Okay.
Good luck, hasta.
Thank you.
Hasta la vista.
Same to you. Bye.
Hasta. Bye-bye.
All right. Before you confuse another poor unsuspecting caller, would you mind if I dip into the old mailbag?
What do you mean, unsuspecting caller? They call us. They know what they're getting into.
Here it is. World records. Sent to us by Pete Daggett from nowhere. Here's a world record. The smallest curbside space successfully reversed into, this is British, reversed into, was one of 19.36 meters. 19.36 meters. That's 57 feet. Equivalent to three standard parking spaces by Mrs. Caroline Wiz of Great Britain. Driving an unmodified Vauxhall Nova Swing, she started the maneuver at 11:15 a.m. in Ropergate, Pontefract, and successfully parked within 3 feet of the pavement 8 hours and 14 minutes later. This can't be true, can it? There was slight damage to the bumpers and wings of her own and the two adjoining cars, as well as shop frontage and two lampposts. I like it. That's good.
What are her wings? Fenders? Wings, fenders?
Bumpers and wings. Bumpers and wings must be fenders.
I don't know.
Wow.
Those Brits, they really have screwed up the language, haven't they?
Well, I mean, I knew it was from Britain because you know how curb was spelled. Curbside space. K-E-R-B.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how they spell it?
That's how they spell it, man.
Literates.
When are they going to learn the language? What's their problem?
And that accent. Where do they get off with that accent?
Oh, snobs. That's all they are.
Oh, God. If you'd like to talk to us, we're not snobs. If you'd like to talk to us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Hans Holtznagel calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, come on. Tell us your real name.
Yeah, it's the real item.
Holtznagel, Holtznagel.
Not a bad guess. Holz, no T.
Oh, I should have known that.
Nagel.
Holtz, of course, Holtz.
What's up, Hans?
Well, I have a question about something my wife does when she's driving.
Mm-mm.
She turns off the engine when she's sitting at a stoplight.
That's good.
She knows I'm asking this question.
Sure.
I've talked about it to her quite a lot, and I'm just going to ask it as objectively as possible.
Yeah, and I appreciate, I can tell. I can tell that you're...
That you're asking this question with all due respect.
With all due respect
to your wife.
That's correct, of my beloved wife. The question is there any benefit, mechanical or otherwise, to doing that, or any harm, mechanical or otherwise,
you're restraining yourself from the little parenthetical phrase, is my wife a complete wacko? We have to say, you did not intimate in any way that you thought your wife was a complete...
Oh, he intimated. He just didn't say it.
You said it. I didn't.
Well, under what circumstances exactly does she do it? Does she do it at every single traffic light?
No, not every single traffic light, to her credit. In fact...
None of these parenthetical little intimations.
She knows I'm asking the question this way. So
is she there?
She's not here right now.
Oh, you lucky devil, you.
We can send you a tape of the show.
Oh, my. I'm afraid... in any case, what she does is turn it off if she thinks the stoplight is going to last a long time, such as about a minute.
Yeah.
In practice, and she knows I've been timing her, sometimes it's a lot less than that. In fact, sometimes it's as little as 15 seconds. But if she thinks it's going to be that short, she doesn't turn it off.
Sure. She thinks a minute. That's her That's her criteria, cutoff criterion.
And she has reasons. She believes that... she doesn't want to be pumping fumes into the atmosphere when she's just sitting there. That's reasonable enough. And she also doesn't like the smell of the fumes. If we're sitting in a line of cars...
You're getting everyone else's anyway.
Right, sometimes you're sitting there alone, and fair enough. She's kind of sensitive to that.
I never shut my engine off because my own fumes always smell better than everyone else's. So I want to make sure that if I'm surrounded by fumes, I'm at least insulated from everyone else's by my own.
So the question is...
See, this is a difficult question to answer because there are times when you would want to shut the key off.
What? When? Who? Why?
Well, you don't have this problem, Thomas, because your car stalls at every stoplight. So you pull up, it stalls, and when the light turns green, you restart it and drive away.
I would never purposefully turn off the engine once it got going.
Well,
I
would never have done it. Well, no, in your case,
in my case.
Right. But I would never have recommended this years ago when engines were carbureted because the amount of gasoline wasted in restarting it was, in fact, significant. So the losses incurred... by running the engine, we could never be offset by turning it off unless it was for a long period of time. And more than that, the initial startup pollution would be so great that you'd negate any positive effects from having shut the key off.
I contend that that may still be true.
I don't know. It is not true anymore because with modern fuel injected cars...
I don't mean technically true.
Oh, spiritually?
Spiritually, emotionally, and in fact, the way people start their cars, true.
Well, if Hans' wife starts her car the way I think she does, she just turns the key and doesn't step on the gas and starts right up and runs at 850 RPM, just like it would have had she not shut it off.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, so I think in that sense, it's probably all right. The wear and tear, of course, comes on the battery and the starter motor and the flywheel.
Yeah.
Which are not cheap. The battery's cheap, but the flywheel and the starter aren't, especially in a Camry.
It's not a simple... question. I mean, if we take it purely from an economic standpoint, it is certainly not trivial to figure out whether the amount of fuel you're saving in all the lights that you stop at is in any way offset or more than offset by the wear and tear on the battery and the starter and the flywheel. I mean, when we think of it in the grand scheme of things, her little effort is minor. However, maybe she could start something. I mean, maybe if we could get everybody to do that. The problem then becomes traffic, because now... when the light turns green, we got a line of 20 cars, all of which aren't running.
And worse than that, all it takes is one jerk like my brother to have a car that just
doesn't
goes,
stop.
but
I'm sure that there is someone at Berkeley who has already done the calculations to figure out how much fuel would be saved if everybody stopped, because there are statistics on how much fuel gets burned by people stopped at red lights in a year, and it's millions of barrels.
Like most of the questions we get on the show, this is much too difficult for us to answer.
It's way beyond us.
However, I would suggest that if you know the stop is going to be 2 minutes, I would absolutely recommend shutting your car off.
Boy, there aren't many lights in the world that are two-minute lights.
Oh, but we hit for some that are a minute and a half out here.
I'll give you one example where people never shut off their cars on the show. It is when trains pass. Now, you should never do it while you're on the tracks. But if you're on either side of the track, if you're on the wrong side of the tracks, you should certainly shut the car off, because no train goes by in a minute's time. At least freight trains don't.
Oh, no, right.
Right. So the conclusion is, economically, not a good idea. From the environment's point of view, not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea, but only if everybody does it. I mean, she's not doing herself any good or anybody
think
else.
Globally, act locally.
Right.
Come on,
act automotively.
Hans, thanks for your call, and I tell your wife to do whatever she wants. You know she will anyway.
Thank you, gentlemen.
See you later.
All right,
she
bye.
May be onto something.
Bye-bye. She may be.
She may be onto something.
Then again, she may be what?
She may be wacko.
Okay, look, my new digital watch tells me that it's time for us to take a break.
What time is it?
I don't know. It's still flashing 0021. I haven't figured out how to set it yet.
We'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a minute. And even though the universe has second thoughts about expanding whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kay Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
The world was shocked when pro-Trump extremists stormed and seized the U.S. Capitol. Throughout this tumultuous era, the NPR Politics podcast has been there every day explaining and making sense of the news. We'll be doing that through the final days of the Trump administration as we all try to understand how this moment happened and what will come next.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzler. And as promised, this is from the wonderful world of home economics.
Yeah, what the heck is that? Tell me about it.
Well, this came in.
I don't know.
This required significant obfuscation, declarification, and the like. But
oh, I'm sure you did your best.
But the essence of it was sent in by someone named Jerry Galloway, and here it is. My friend had purchased a piece of slate to put into the floor in front of his fireplace. I think that piece is called the hearth, actually.
Is it?
I believe so. Anyway, the slate was 3/4 inch thick by something like 10 inches wide and 48 inches long and weighed in the order of 175 pounds. Now, he had cut a hole in the oak floor that was basically the same size as the piece of the slate. So he had to just
plunk it right in.
Plunk it right in there.
Get his fingers out of the way as fast as possible.
And the depth of the hole was exactly 3/4 inch, the same as the slate. And, of course, there was still the subfloor, underneath it. You know,
of course.
He'd removed just the oak flooring. You with me so far?
I'm with you.
When he put one end of the slate into the hole in the floor,
that's
he realized
not gonna work.
That he would have to drop the other end to get the slate into the hole.
No.
And he realized that if he dropped the brittle slate even a half an inch,
it would break.
It would break.
And it wouldn't go in the hole anyway.
It wouldn't go in the hole because that only works if it has no third dimension.
Exactly.
But that's another issue for another day.
Oh, okay.
And there was so little clearance. I mean, it must have been like 1/100 inch or something that he couldn't even use that thin fishing line to lower the end of the slate. So we sat there for the longest time drinking beers and pondering this dilemma.
I got it already. I know the question and I know the answer.
After my 5th or 6th trip to the kitchen, I returned with something from the kitchen that solved the problem in, I think, elegant fashion.
I do, too.
What did I find that worked so well that allowed us to lower the slate into the hole without risk of breaking it? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $20 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
And by the way, you can submit puzzles using either of those addresses.
Sure.
Especially if you don't like the ones I've been using lately, you can send your own damn puzzler in and see if that fares any better.
Let my brother obfuscate it. You won't recognize it when he gets done.
But if you have a question about your car or anything else, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888 888-
727-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there. I'm calling from Seattle. My name is Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth. Elizabeth. What's up?
I got a 1972 145S Volvo.
Oh, a real beauty. Go ahead.
72. And it's green.
145.
We knew it was green. You didn't have to tell us. So go ahead.
It does something very strange. Sometimes when I turn the windshield wipers on and off, it turns the radio off. And sometimes when I put the blinker on, it turns the car off. And sometimes when I put it in reverse, it turns the car off. And the other day, I think I turned the headlights on and it turned the radio off. That was the first. And it's been doing this for about 4 years occasionally.
Yeah.
Four occasional years.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, Elizabeth. Today, for the first time in, I don't know, what year is it? Months. I decided to drive my 74 Chevy.
He's been dying to tell this story. In fact, it's mating season for the raccoons that have been living in the back, and they vacated the back seat for a short spell, and they left him a notice in his mailbox. If you want to drive your Chevy, this is a small window of opportunity, so to speak.
Actually, I have to read the ransom note I got for the raccoons. But this is apropos to your situation. Get in the car, hasn't run for months. And the reason I haven't driven it, to be perfectly frank, is that I can't get the top up. It's a convertible. But finally, I managed to get the top up, so now I could drive it. I turned the key and I started. Of course, it starts immediately. Well, great car. Lights come on the dashboard everywhere. Things flashing, buzzing. I step on the brake, the radio goes on. I take my foot off the brake, the radio goes off. I say, my God.
Right, everything's just as it should be.
What is going on here? So I back out of my driveway. And I drive up the street. I just want to get the cricks out of it.
Well,
know? I just want to exercise the vehicle. Well,
I want to give you
bit.
One last opportunity to make this long story short. Or have you abandoned that already?
No. This is Elizabeth's question. Here I am driving, and the lights are everywhere. I mean, every disaster light that I have on the dashboard is telling me that there's a disaster.
But you kept driving because...
So what do I do? Knowing full well the consequences, I say, damn the torpedoes. I just keep driving. I take a nice little drive, and I maybe go, how far? 4 or 5 miles? By the time I got back to my house, everything had fixed itself.
Isn't that marvelous?
The lights all came on when they were supposed to. The radio and the tape deck, my 8-track tape player, playing perfectly. All the flashing lights went out, and I just pulled her right back into the driveway, patted her on the rump, and said, good old girl. Do you ever do that, Elizabeth?
You know, the windshield wiper light radio thing never happens when my boyfriend's in the car. Maybe I should just have...
Pat him on the rump. Maybe that's what you have to do.
Well, I think the wiper thing, you say you turn the wipers on, and what happens? The radio goes off.
No, turn the wipers off, and the radio goes off. Once the wipers turning off made it turn on again.
Just once you turn the wipers off and the radio went on, but usually when you turn them off, the radio goes off.
Right.
Oh, picky. Come on, you're driving a sled here. What do you expect? 1972.
You're going to move to Alaska.
Isn't there something I could do without having to, like, follow every single wire in the car?
No. There's nothing you can do short of that, so to speak.
Well, that is disguised, the answer here. Short. You have a short
someplace.
That's what I said. And I would guess that you probably have bad ground connections. And what's happening is things are acting as grounds that shouldn't be, and that's why things are turning on and off. We've seen it happen where sometimes you blow a fuse, and things that are on the same circuit sometimes will use another circuit as a ground circuit.
A crossfire, almost.
Yeah, so what's
induction.
Happening here is you probably have bad ground connections under the dashboard someplace. And that's where I would begin to look. All your problems are under the dashboard.
There's no doubt about that. They're all under the dashboard.
And they're all in the vicinity. I'm going to give you a big hint. They're all in the vicinity of the wiper motor. So have someone poke around there. They're going to find that you have bad ground connections or broken wires, and they're all right by that wiper motor, and that's what did it.
What does that have to do with the blinker and the reverse gear?
It's all there.
It's all there.
Everything is right under there.
Right. In fact, if you stare up under there, you'll probably find Carl Sagan pondering the universe.
That's where he is.
Everything's under the
dashboard of a 72 Volvo.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry.
That's where he is.
It's all under there.
Okay.
But in the meantime, don't get shook about it. And don't use reverse.
Okay.
All right? Thanks for your call, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Boy,
reverse is not necessary. I had a car without reverse for months and months. I drove without reverse. I admit it was exciting sometimes, especially when it snowed. But most of the time, I managed. We get used to too much. Everyone wants everything to be perfect.
No, as a matter of fact, I have decided from now on to go without shoes. I just want to, I mean, what the hell? I think we're going to try that for a while. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Peterson. I'm calling from Memphis.
Peterson's your first name?
That's right.
Okay.
Peterson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that as a first name before.
Yeah, it gets kind of confusing sometimes because, you know, I get introduced and they say, oh, and what's your first name? I say Peterson. Like Peterson? Like,
well,
no.
It would be unfortunate if you had a last name like Bill.
Yeah, that's true. That would get really confusing.
Are there two S's in Peterson?
No, just one.
Okay. What's up?
Well, see, I have a phobia.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, a family friend had a garage, and one day when he was filling air in the tire of a pickup truck, the tire exploded. He was thrown across the parking lot, and he got banged up pretty badly.
Yeah.
So all of my life, I have been terrified to fill up the air in my tires.
Yeah.
So finally, after a couple of years, the woman I was with, she kept on asking me, why don't you ever put air in your tires? Because they always were, like, real floppy.
And you said, shut up!
I was like, don't ask me. No, I finally said it out loud. I had never said it out loud. I said, I'm afraid if I put air in my tires, they'll explode and I'll get killed.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't worry about it. So she got me a little gauge. She showed me how to do it. So I did it. Mm. It was like a major breakthrough.
Did you feel an incredible lightness of being?
It was awesome.
It was.
2 days later at work, a coworker comes in and says, you'll never guess what happened to my cousin when he was filling up air in his tire. And that's it. I've been ruined since. I won't go near it. So now I have to go to a gas station and like say, could you like check my tires or get a friend to do it for me?
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, like, really, what are my chances? What are the stats here of this happening? And are there any safety precautions I can take to safeguard my well-being while I do this?
Of course there are.
Well, I just want you to know that I had the very same phobia for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the thought of it, I think it's the imagery. I mean,
of a shard of rubber taking your head off.
Not only that, but, I mean, your friend, I mean, if you had, for example, if it was an old truck, I don't know how old you are, but if it was a lot of years ago and it was an old truck,
right,
and it might have had a split rim wheel, in which case not only would the tire blow and hit you with rubber and air, but a piece of the rim would come off and cut you in half.
Okay, you're not really helping me right here.
Yeah,
and I must have read something about that once, and I'm just trying to show
you. I can just see that phobia melting away.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever drive again now.
But what he wants to know is, what are the chances? The chances are 1 in 10 million.
Yeah, really? The chances are real slim.
Real slim. I
mean, doesn't matter, though.
You've got a better chance of having
winning the lottery.
A pile of bricks fall off a staging near a construction site. You've got a better chance of being run over by a bread truck. You've got a better, I mean, all of these things could happen to you. I don't know, making you nervous, am I?
So all those other things are going to happen.
Gee,
no, I think that you shouldn't be worried. I mean, life is fraught with all kinds of dangers, and you can't be worried about all of them. You got to pick one, and you've picked a beauty. Because the chances of this happening are so remote.
Right. Are there any safety precautions I can take?
The precautions you can take, certainly, are having someone else fill up your tires.
Sure.
Right.
And or wearing some kind of head protection. Because the most likely thing to happen is...
Full body protection.
No. I mean,
drive around from now on, you get one of those spaceman suits. And you get out of your car, fill her up, I'm going to check the tire. And you see how long it is before you get arrested.
Come on, this is serious business. I mean, the reason this happens primarily is that people
I can see him with the suit.
People overfill... Can't see... You see what I'm up against?
Can you see him with the suit, the big helmet with the glass thing in front of him?
Yeah, the
face?
Biohazard suit.
And he's walking like Gort. And he's going over to check.
I give up. I'm going for coffee. You guys can talk to each other.
The guy's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and you're laughing.
I'm sorry.
It usually happens because people put air in a tire that's already overinflated.
Yeah.
And it's more likely than not that the friend you knew that had this accident was putting air in a tire that may have had 100 PSI in it already. And that will cause a tire to blow, or a tire that's defective.
Or tires, for a while, that instant flat stuff had, I think, propane in it.
Yeah, but they don't do that anymore.
They don't do that anymore, and that might be what it takes. It might be that your friend was not really filling the tire. He might have been messing around with the tire and caused a spark, which caused the propane to ignite and therefore blow up. If we could convince you of that, that would be good, because then you would say, well, filling the tire is not going to make it blow up. And it's probably not going to.
But filling a tire...
But it could happen.
But you should never rely on those, the pumps at the gas station, you know, you think you're set, you crank the thing for 32 pounds.
Right.
You should always have a tire pressure gauge of high quality, one of which you can buy on our website, by the way.
I knew you'd get around to that.
But if you have a tire pressure gauge...
You can also buy life insurance on our website if you're interested in that.
And the spacesuit.
And we have the spacesuit,
too. And helmet.
And the
Bronco Nagurski official football helmet. But if you had a high-quality gauge and you checked your tire pressure before introducing any more air, you could get an idea of when your tire was close to being filled and you wouldn't overfill it. And if you do have a tire that has the right amount of air pressure and it happens to come apart during the filling process, it's not going to take your head off. I mean, people get blowouts all the time, and passers-by, that is pedestrians, don't have their legs taken off at the kneecaps.
Yeah, but all those trees that are falling down by the side of the road, how do you think that happened?
He's working against me.
You know, we almost get there, and then...
Exactly. Two steps forward and three steps back.
I was just thinking, I'm going to buy that gauge. I'm about to buy that. Forget it. Forget the gauge.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we've helped a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah,
definitely.
We don't know
maybe
how.
Maybe I'll go for the suit thing, too.
Have you heard that sometimes when you're getting gasoline, the gasoline can blow up from the tank? Hey, good luck, Peterson.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for calling.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Poor guy.
Well, of all the phobias they have, this ain't a bad one.
This isn't bad, no.
No, but he won't fill its tank anymore now either.
He's not going to get gas. It means he's got about 200 miles before he has to worry about this. As soon as he uses up that tank of gas, he's done.
He's done. Well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the subway fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David, the calves of Belleville Green, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug, the old gray mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from his New Year's resolution trip to the Camden Crackers, Carrot Juice, and Chamomile Calorie Counters Confab. Is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our long-distance truck driver is Etienne Wheeler. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. Our solicitor of new ideas is Obi Quiet. Our director of ethics and honesty is you, Lion Sack. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our rental property manager is Ulysses Up. Ulysses Up.
Ulysses Up.
Our construction manager is Dustin Dubree. The president of the Disgruntled Hatchback Owners Club is Ivana Trunk. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikov and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey. Known to the pedestrians with death wishes in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And above all, don't drive like Tommy.
And don't drive like Ramey.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, subscribe to our weekly podcast, and check out our vast supply of freshly returned clothing and best of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we'll help you clean up your driveway. Got a car that's ready for its next life? The Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and ship the proceeds to the NPR station of your choice. Do it now, and next April 15th, you can tell the IRS to rave on because you got a tax deduction. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Bondo, the human cannonball, curses the accurate placement of his catch net whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.